Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's a weekly program about health, fitness, nutrition, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. On this day before Thanksgiving, we assume your thoughts, like ours, are full of food. So our first guest is a local icon in the catering business, Eileen Dunn, founder of Dunn to Your Taste, catering headquartered just down the road in neighboring Camas.
Then, out of necessity, we turn, naturally, to wine. Kirsten Fox of the Fox School of Wine will join us to provide just what we all need, a holiday sommelier recommendation for turkey or for whatever it might be that you have in the oven or are preparing for tomorrow's meal. This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson from Davidson Orthopedics, proud sponsor of KPCW. We're pleased to announce the opening of our new Park City office in New Park at 1122 Center Drive, right behind Jupiter Bowl. More information on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Pettigrew from Park City Mountain and a proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain instructors share their love of skiing and snowboarding with guests, helping them improve their skills and enjoy the mountain. More information on Ski and Snowboard School and other programs at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host Tim Henney. Happy Thanksgiving tomorrow, Tim.
Thanks, Lynn. Same to you.
Thank you. While many businesses have come and gone over the years, Dunn to Your Taste has a long and successful history of catering here in the Park City area, with a long list of venues and fiercely fresh ingredients sourced as close to home as possible. Dunn to Your Taste has become the go-to caterer for many gatherings and events. And since we're talking the day before a traditional celebration, it seems fitting we would hear from Eileen Dunn, the founder of Dunn to Your Taste, for her thoughts on the menu, a discussion that's also pretty much become an annual tradition here on The Mountain Life. Eileen, welcome.
Thank you, Lynn and Tim, and happy Thanksgiving to all. Very grateful to be in this wonderful town.
Oh, we have to have the discussion about what we're grateful for. That's actually my children's least favorite part of Thanksgiving dinner, when you go around the table.
Yeah, but you have that. It's a must do. You have to have everybody, even if you have 40 people, you have to go through the whole table. That's everybody's favorite part at my house.
Right? That's so funny.
Right.
Maybe it's because I always start crying when I talk about, after a couple glasses of wine, when I talk about what I'm grateful for.
I know.
My kids just hate it.
But it's always about your kids, isn't it?
Well,
aren't you grateful for your
family
kids?
And friends.
Family.
And
I know what
where
makes
we live.
You cry.
Yes.
Oh, no. And if there aren't tears, then something's not going right.
Right. It's so fun to talk about these kinds of traditions.
Right.
And Eileen, when you've been on the show before, pre-Thanksgiving, it is always fun to talk to you about. I can throw out any type of food, and you can throw back at me some wonderfully creative way to prepare it. So,
well, I hope so. But okay, put me to the test.
Okay.
Let's see.
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk turkeys, because last year in my backyard, there was this deep frying operation going on. So tell us about this whole turkey deep frying thing.
Well, and of course, you get me on something that I don't do often. Well, I do not do a lot of fried and deep fried turkeys. One, because usually around certain areas and around my house, there's a little too much wine happening. So the first,
it's dangerous.
We do not want any hot grease anywhere near anything. It can be, it's a little bit more stressful. And usually the guys are out there, and it's not my favorite. It's absolutely delicious. But everything with Thanksgiving is so delicious anyways. I mean, you can make it very delicious. So to add that extra frying, I try not to encourage or do, just for me and anyone else, because everybody's so health conscious now.
And can you accomplish the same thing sort of by brining?
Absolutely. You can brine. And then also, I always start the turkeys off completely, you know, we rub and massage the turkeys with different herbs and different spices. And you even add paprika for the coloring. And if you cover it for the first couple hours and you can really crisp it at the end, it will keep it really nice and moist. And another trick, we're talking about turkey and keeping it moist, one of the tricks I've done over the years, because I've had to feed, 200 to 300, 400 people Thanksgiving in one day, and you have to, some of those times, you have to pre-slice and keep it for a couple hours or even the day before, and just have a really, really, really good chicken stock or broth on hand, and either a light oil, like a avocado oil or a tasteless oil, or an organic butter. So you just put butter on top and the chicken stock, and it'll keep that turkey really moist, and it won't be like the sawdust that you may have remembered as you were growing up.
I have a trick on Halloween, on Thanksgiving. Yes? Calling you for
right.
my turkey.
You've done that before.
After that description.
I think about 20 years ago, you used to get the drop-off turkey dinners. You used to come over.
Oh, your secret is out.
That was a long time ago.
That's the trick right there.
You did, didn't you? I can remember. Yeah. Right. So, some people smoke and things like that. I'm more of the traditionalist, and then adding lots more fun vegetables so that people that don't really do the turkey or do the dark meat or anything like that, they can have whatever they want type thing and try to stay away from all the butters and the sugars.
Right.
But it is Thanksgiving, people.
That's right. So again, you take organic butter and a chicken stock.
Yeah.
And you're just basting
well,
the turkey.
Well, if you cover it, it bastes itself. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying afterwards, you want it to sit, or if you're holding it, I always add that can really moisten things up. If, let's say, you're holding it for a while, even afterwards, if you cut it and slice it and have it for sandwiches later through the week, putting it with a little bit of chicken stock and butter and or something like an avocado oil or a grapeseed oil, very, very little will keep it nice and moist. You just don't want to add an oil that has a really strong flavor to it.
Okay. All right. That's turkeys. Hey, do people still do plastic bags? Is that a thing of the past?
Well, I don't know. You mean the paper bags or the plastic
bags?
Well,
there were plastic. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, I grew up with my mom and dad doing the paper bags.
The paper bags,
yeah, brown paper bags from the grocery store, and then they would slather the inside with butter and cover it, and then have the oven on at 300, 325, and then take it off, to the end. And I do a little bit of that, not the bags, but I do a little bit of that with covering with foil and things like that, just to get that little tint moisture going.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, let's move into Tim's next favorite thing. What is that? I don't know.
I was going to say, I have three things to avoid on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
These are my favorite Thanksgiving stories. But
at
one Thanksgiving event where, you walk into the kitchen and it's just all a beehive of activity.
Right.
It's chaos. There's
right.
things going on and multiple people in ovens.
Yeah, right.
And then somebody says, "Where's the turkey?" And the person who is responsible for bringing the turkey is like, "Whoops." So let's see, you're an hour away from serving the meal and there's no turkey. That happened to me once.
Oh, that's
get Eileen's phone number.
This happened. A family member put a frozen turkey, forgot to defrost the turkey, so put a frozen turkey in, and that delays your turkey process a long time, we learned.
Yes.
And then one time the turkey went in upside down, so instead of breast up, breast down, and that was interesting.
Well,
all things to avoid.
Well, I start with my turkeys breast down,
this started and finished.
halfway through, I turn them over. But the frozen thing, and I don't know, but at that time, I would have a group of people, and we're actually pulling the turkey out. We are slicing it. We're getting that chicken stock and butter that we love, and we're kind of going to do a little boil roast on top of the stove to get that turkey cooked in time.
Yep.
Is that what you ended up doing?
I don't
something
recall
like
what actually happened with that, but I do remember it was quite a fiasco.
And then the person probably should get some B beatings for not bringing the turkey. I'm kidding. Well, that's called delegation and signed contracts when they come next time. Exactly. Or emails that go out. Now you remember, you're bringing this, and you must be here by 4 o'clock or something like that.
Oh, it happens, but that's what makes it fun.
I bet you laugh so hard about those things.
Yes, I do. I have good stories about Thanksgiving.
Right.
Yeah. Most of them related to my family members. So my question about actual, you know, what to serve is, what about what about vegetarian? Have you, do you do a lot of
Thanksgiving is one of the best vegetarian holidays.
Yeah.
Because the fall harvest and all the squashes and everything just make just some wonderful dishes. You know, just making any kind of casserole with ancient grains or, you know, the smash-ups or mash-ups or match-ups, whatever I'm called. But, you could do one of Lynn's favorites, which would be like cauliflower, rice it, and then do very slivered slices of caramelized Brussels sprouts. Ooh. And then she could reduce some unsweetened pomegranate juice and stir it in with either a little bit of oil, if you're vegan, oil, if you're not, a little bit of butter, your salt and pepper, little savory spices, and then sprinkle it with your pomegranate seeds, and it's absolutely delicious.
I'm so excited.
Right.
I knew those were three ingredients that I love. I didn't know what to do with them.
Well, you can do them all differently, too. And then you can, you know, take your squash or your butternut squashes, and you can mash, you know, it's apple season. So you can add apples to any of your vegetables to mash it up. Of course, we've got the beets. We have all the squashes. We have our apples. Pears come. You got your pomegranates. There's so much you can do. And you can layer, you know, your different grains. And now for people that are gluten-free, they can buy their, they just have to toast it, but they can buy their gluten-free breads and they can make delicious stuffings or dressings with that.
Yeah.
When the turkey's the center of the meal, what replaces the turkey in that vegetarian option? Or are you just making everything else a little more elaborate so you don't miss the turkey? Or
right. You make everything more elaborate, and then you would pick maybe certain things that would be the main protein or entree thing. And I've done things as simple as a layered squash, cabbage, kind of a, like a lasagna thing, so it feels like it's that entree. I think people are really used to it. I really think that it wouldn't be surprising to guess that if you had a Thanksgiving dinner and there was no turkey, purposely, that I think people could just enjoy it just as much. It's you can roast things, glaze things. You can put a small amount of caramelization. And, you know, from mushrooms are in, right? You know, you got tons of mushrooms right now. Those are very hearty. And then you add your nuts and your proteins and your different grains and beans, and people can feel like they really got their protein. You also can use, you know, for desserts, you can use your cashew yogurts or almond yogurts or things like that. So you... There's so much out there, and we all know so much more, and there's such a selection that we can be very creative. Your guest does not, or you do not have to just have a salad and, you know, some spaghetti squash, even though spaghetti squash glazed is fabulous, right?
Wait, talk about that. I love spaghetti squash glazed.
Well, what I would do is I would put, you know, cook the spaghetti squash, you know,
Spaghetti it,
and then use a little bit of your pumpkin pie spices.
Uh-huh.
That would be great with some sliced apples or sliced pears in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the same thing with pomegranate juice. Mm-hmm. But if you just put a lot of fresh herbs in it, and you can glaze it either with butter or a really nice oil, and then you can stick it under the broiler, and it will crust the whole top. If usually there's enough sugar in that, so if you just bring the heat, the sugars will come out. If you ever need some extra glazing or sugar, it's the apple juice from the apples, the pear juice, or if you need to add a little more sweetener, a little bit of coconut nectar. But you don't need the brown sugar. You don't need the sugar because they all have enough sugar in them. They'll just naturally caramelize. So that's great. But little, you know, if you put out a big platter and you do the little piles of the spaghetti squash, and have the herbs all around it, that looks like an entree just within itself.
Beautiful.
You know, so.
I have possibly the dumbest question that I'm going to ask during this entire interview.
No such thing.
Okay. Does the caramelization process ever change? Are there new things that you do? You know, there are just some age-old processes in cooking that never change.
Well, people can look at caramelization as so many different things. Some people look at caramelization, well, bringing kind of the natural sugars out and searing things. So let's say if you caramelize onions, it's a word that can be used all different ways, mm-hmm. Len. If you caramelize onions, you know, usually there's a little bit of acid in it, like a vinegar or, you know, something along that, or wine, and then a little bit of sugar. But there's so much natural with just a little bit of oil, you can create it without, you can add fruit juices to it. You can add anything to it. And then there's the caramelization that you put when you roast things in the oven. And you use whatever's left over that and deglaze the pans with fruit juice or stocks or things like that. If you're roasting potatoes, you're going to want to toss them with a little bit of herbs, maybe some garlic, maybe some rosemary, maybe some savory things, maybe some pomegranate juice, whatever. But you want a little bit of oil in that. And then just the searing of it will caramelize. And everything has natural sugars. So you'll know, you know, when you get that really pretty roasted brown look, that can be considered caramelization too. Okay. So it's kind of across the board now.
Great.
You can caramelize anything with anything and, you know, basically almost, you know. But yeah, I don't know if I answered that.
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Lots of clarification here.
Or lots of more confusion because you can do it any way you want.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, what about those fads like turduckens? What the heck is a turducken?
I've never even heard. Oh, is that a turkey with a duck inside?
Well, I've never had the pleasure to do it. And I know my understanding is they're all deboned. And it almost is like a rolled roast.
So it's various fowl.
Yeah, so it'd be as they go down in size. So it'd be the turkey and then the duck and then like a quail or chicken and then something smaller.
A mouse.
But they debone. Yeah, mouse. anyways, so I've never had the pleasure to do that.
And well, that's kind of refreshing.
And I've never really wanted to do. I mean,
I know.
I think back, you know, old school, the only person I remember even looking doing it was Julia Child.
Oh.
You know, doing the process, which, you know.
Did she coin the term turducken?
I don't know. See, I'm stumped.
I put turducken in there with the deep frying, the turkey.
Yeah, I put that in there, and I don't know why. It just seems so forced, you know, something so forced put together.
Literally.
And it kind of seems unnatural to me, but it's kind of like, you know, foie gras, just that it has that same feeling for me, even though it isn't the same at all.
Mm.
You know, just kind of.
It's kind of like deep fried Twinkies.
Right.
I don't
or
know.
Or butter balls or something like that. I know. And I'm sure it probably is delicious, but you're just adding so much. I don't know. I would love someone to tell me whoever tried it.
Yeah.
And why? Yeah.
So, you know, probably it's just one of those really cool things that some people think that are really cool to do it.
Something different.
Yeah. What about stuffing? What is the role that stuffing plays in this whole meal? Is it critical, or is it just a nice amenity or add-on?
Well,
I mean, my family always kind of made it critical because my dad always added oysters to the bread stuffing, and that was a very big thing. Our oyster stuffing was like that was our tradition.
Right. It was very
a frozen turkey and oyster stuffing. That was our tradition.
And the oyster stuffing happened to be room temperature for hours and hours while we were waiting for the turkey. No, just. Stuffing, dressing and stuffing, or you could call it savory bread pudding if you want a different term for it. It's very important because it's a very traditional comfort food, but there's different ways to do it. You can get the same, you know, you can rice some vegetables and just add a lot more vegetables to it if you want to just kind of take a little bit of that starch. But the vegetables I would put in it would be more your starchy vegetables like the squash and the rutabagas and turnips, and you can kind of add it that way with a little bit of bread. I think it's a must. One, all the vegetarians can eat it. You can make it, you know, vegan. And now you can make it gluten-free. Mm-hmm. But when I have 40 people at my house and I have a few gluten-free, I will ask them, can you bring your, you know, your gluten-free gravy mm-hmm. and your gluten-free stuffing or dressing? And then, you know, we'll take care of everything else.
Do you really have 40 people at your house for Thanksgiving in addition to preparing 400 meals for other people, some of whom might be like me?
Well, Tim, this is what we do, and we've done it for years and years. We have our Christmas, Thanksgiving holiday party the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So we've done it for years and years, and it's wonderful. And I get help from this company down the street. It's called Done to Your Taste. I have help from them, and then I cheat, and the next day I have help come and help me clean up. So I do cheat a little bit. It's not like I do it all on my own.
You can do this. It's your business.
I know. But, you know, I don't have staff or anything, but I do. They do come and help me clean. All I have to do at the end of the night, all we do is everybody just puts the food away and then just sit around and enjoy and talk and not worry about cleaning. I would suggest that to anybody. Just put the food away and then hang and it would be worth every penny if you had someone come to clean the next day and do all the dishes and put the house back together.
We haven't talked about cranberries.
Yes.
Do
what
we
about
need
them?
To talk cranberries? It would, you know, just give us an idea of something creative to do with cranberries. I've had a lot of fun with them the last couple of years.
Oh, just you can make your cranberries with pears, with nuts, with orange. My favorite is the orange and the orange zest and kind of going that way. You can also put booze in them. You know,
like
a Cointreau or a Grand Marnier or something like that. I'm usually, because of the big groups, I look at what's pleasing most to all. So I don't go too crazy because there's a lot of – I don't go too crazy with Thanksgiving dinners because you kind of have to keep with some of the traditional flavors because that's what people remember and love, and it's their one day to do mm-hmm. that. But, yes, you can zest up. And to me, my favorite is cooking it in fresh orange juice and adding zest and a few spices.
That's
my favorite.
Good. Okay, help my two kids out who love to cook, but they're into potatoes. Mashed potatoes. Give us some new idea of how to do a mashed potato.
Okay, this is what they want to do. So they're going to get their mashed potatoes. They're going to mash them their regular way, skin off, skin on, or half and half, because that makes it kind of interesting with more texture. But they're going to get a yam, a carrot, a rutabaga, turnip, and maybe even a sweet potato. They're going to peel those raw. They're going to throw them in the Cuisinart and fine dice it, you know, just really teeny, teeny little specks. They're going to mash up their potatoes. They're going to put that in a strainer. They're going to strain that in hot water just so that it's very al dente. When they're done with the mashed potatoes, they're going to put almost these totally cooked little oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I thought I turned that off. Let me just turn this off before it does it again.
I can edit that part out.
Okay. So they're going to take all those root vegetables that are little specks, and when they take the hot potatoes out and they start mashing it all together, and they can do the specks earlier, they throw it in, and then you have these mashed potatoes with this root vegetable going throughout the whole mashed potatoes. So it's like this great medley of root vegetables, but it's really mashed potatoes with just this depth to it. And I actually got that from, I think it's called Concannon Potatoes. It's a Scottish dish that I've done for some of the Scottish holidays. And I call it our confetti mashed potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
But it actually is a Scottish dish. I think it's called Concannon. It's similar to that, but of course a different twist on it.
Right.
But it's delicious, and I think they'll love it.
Okay. Thank you.
And of course, you know, you would add your cauliflower to it, too, your rice
yes.
cauliflower.
Yes. Okay. Anything else?
Not for me. Thanks for joining us, Eileen.
Well, thank you.
I mean,
for
it has become a tradition.
Yeah. Well, happy
a tradition right in front of a tradition.
Oh, thank you. And we're, you know, 2018, 29 years forever young. 29 years.
I've done to your taste.
And it went, I swear, it was yesterday.
I remember when you started.
I know. I was at the River Horse.
Yes.
Did you think it was a forever thing, or were you just sort of like, yeah, let's give this a spin and see what happens?
I liked it so much, and I not to toot my home, but I was known for throwing some great parties and hosting my own parties, and I love it, and I still do on my days off. You know, Gio's like, I can't believe you're hosting something, we're having something tonight. It's like work. And I go, no, I love it. This is, so I'm very, very lucky. I love it. I love it. I love it. And now that we're rebranding and we have our new warehouse and we have our office on Main Street too, it's like we're starting all over with all these fresh new ideas, but with 29 years of experience. So it's a really exciting time, which I'm very grateful for. Thus, yeah. Thanksgiving, you know, grateful for a lot of things.
Yes. Well, we are grateful for your appearance on the Mountain Life as a tradition.
Thank you very much.
And I'm grateful for
all these
years.
I hope to be back next year.
All these years I've known you.
You have always called, so I really appreciate it. And I thank everyone for their support over the years. It's been wonderful.
All right. Eileen Dunn, done to your taste. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
G'day, this is Ashley from Campus Coffee, happy to sponsor programming on KPCW. We can't wait to serve the Park City locals this winter. We're excited by our breakfast and lunch menu to complement our espresso drinks. Campus Coffee is open daily at the base of Park City Mountain Resort, up the stairs from the ice rink next to the Adirondack chairs. CampusCoffee.com.
Valley Behavioral Health is a local nonprofit and proud supporter of KPCW. We are your community behavioral health center and provide a broad range of services, including individual, family, couples, and group therapy for mental health and substance abuse. We serve all ages in all of Summit County. Please check out our website at valleycares.com or 649-8347 for more information.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney.
Our pre-Thanksgiving wine discussion with Kirsten Fox of the Fox School of Wine has also become a favorite tradition on The Mountain Life. How can we talk about food without diving into the wine? For that matter, how can we cook food without delving into wine? After all, it's at least half about the wine, and here to help us navigate the currents and eddies of our local wine selections is none other than our local sommelier and founder of the Fox School of Wine, Kirsten Fox. Kirsten, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Well, thank you, Lynn and Tim. That was quite an introduction.
We always love to have you back, and it is really fun to talk about wine, even when you're not a professional. But when talking to a professional, it makes it so much better.
Wait a minute. Who here is not professional?
Haven't we all drunk enough wine to be professional? I mean, really, at this point, I am not the only professional in this room. I know that.
So, you know, when we talk about Thanksgiving dinner, people somehow want to mix it up. They think they should be drinking perhaps something different, something bubbly, something, I don't know, you know, different than what you would normally eat with turkey, which I guess I only eat turkey once a year. But give us some ideas for Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I kind of, as my world, I've got children who eat in so many different ways now. We've got one who's a vegan, or what she'd call a convenient vegan. So as long as it's convenient, she'll be a vegan. But so we've got all these different, you know, new ways to eat. So I thought of three different ways that people do Thanksgiving. So I approached this with like a vegan or a vegetarian kind of a perspective. So that kind of a Thanksgiving, or a smoked turkey, because that is a whole different ball game in terms of what you're going to pair. And a lot of people up here, a lot of my friends do smoked turkeys. And then I did the traditional normal Thanksgiving type
put in
of
the
thing.
Oven.
Yeah.
Yes.
My sister,
is that a deep fryer?
No.
The deep fryer turkey?
No. Oh, the, oh, is
I've
that
heard
traditional?
A lot about
is that what you're saying?
I think it's kind of becoming the new traditional,
yes.
Isn't it?
Oh, no. We have to bake ours to make sure it's as dry as its pot. And then you just put gobs of gravy on it. That's the remedy. So,
and
yeah,
drink lots of
and
wine.
And drink lots of wine. Nobody cares by the time the meal's served. But if we start with the vegan option, I've paired a white and a red with each of these different types of meals. So my suggestion on the vegetarian vegan white is a wine out of Austria called Grüner Veltliner. Mm. And it is a wine that, as you can imagine, in Austria, they serve it with Wiener Schnitzel, which is, you know, a fried piece of veal. So this wine, it's a very high acid white, but it has a lot of character that offers pepper, you know, like a white pepper kind of a aroma and mouthfeel and mouth taste. But also it's got less fruit and a little bit of vegetable kind of character. And when you're trying to pair a wine, a fruity thing, with a vegetable-y thing, it kind of sometimes has a bit of a problem.
Hmm.
So this one, actually, this wine even is known to have aromas like green peppers and green beans and that. So that would be one I'd suggest. It's also extremely reasonably priced at our liquor store. So that's a Grüner Veltliner out of Austria. The red for that vegan or vegetarian meal I suggest is a Beaujolais. It is made from the Gamay grape in an area south of Burgundy, France. And it is a very, I don't want to recommend the Nouveau Beaujolais. That is something that comes out every November. That's something you call like a gulping wine. Literally, it's like sit around. It's super, super, super simple. But the wines that are grown in the same area that they actually make in a traditional style rather than the Nouveau Beaujolais, the Beaujolais wines are oaked and they're made from the Gamay grape. And the Gamay grape is a very light body, a very light-skinned grape that gives you a lot of really great fruit flavors, but not as many tannins because you don't have as much fat typically in a vegan or a vegetarian meal.
So are we talking along the lines of like a Pinot Noir or something like that in terms of being lighter?
Yes, we are.
I don't think I've ever had a Beaujolais. And I have had a Nouveau Beaujolais, and I thought it was horrible.
Yeah.
Maybe I should open up my mind again and try Beaujolais.
Beaujolais is different. And they're a Cru Beaujolais. There's a completely different, I mean, they literally make it in a traditional style versus Nouveau Beaujolais, which is made in a carbonic method, which basically means it's done in like 2 weeks, which is, it just keeps everything very simple in that. So,
Did you say the Beaujolais doesn't have as much tannin?
Correct.
And tannin is something how does tannin interact with, I think you were saying that because you're not eating turkey and meat, you don't need the tannins, is that right?
So tannin, I have a saying when I teach about wine, it's fat and tannin are friends.
Right.
And tannin is that grippy compound in red wine. Well, it's in white wine as well, but it's that grippy compound, the same kind of grippiness that you get from a walnut skin or if you bite accidentally into a banana peel, that grippy astringent quality that gets in your mouth. So that's tannin. All three of those have tannin in them. And the higher the tannin in the red wine or in the grape itself, as the juice sits on the skins, as they let it sit there, it absorbs tannin into the juice, just like tea gets, you know, steeped into water. So you want a high tannin content if you have a lot of fat in the food. And typically, as far as I've seen with vegan and vegetarian meals, they tend to be a little bit lower in fat. There's certainly cheese if you're at a vegetarian meal, but for the most part, they're not using those heavy animal fats that we have in some of the bigger, more robust meals.
How does a person know which wines have high tannin content versus which ones don't? Is that something that you have to learn, or can you look at a label and it says X percent tannin?
Boy, that's a really good question because, no, you can't look at the label.
Right. You have to go to the Fox School of Wine.
Yes, you have to go.
There's nowhere else in the world
that you can learn this. You can, if you're interested, you can surf it, but generally you go from Beaujolais is the lightest tannin into and I'm just going with general types of, Beaujolais goes into maybe Sangiovese out of Italy, then you go into Pinot Noir, then you go into, say, a Malbec, Merlot, Cabernet, Zinfandel is kind of in there more with the Malbec, a little lower on tannin, and then you end with like the Syrah, the big Chanuk Syrah, and then Petite Syrah, which sounds like it would be a little baby Syrah, but it's like not that.
So anyway, what is it compared? I mean, this is kind of getting us on a tangent.
Yes, we are on a tangent.
Syrah and Petite Syrah, yes. I've always wondered.
So Petite Syrah is actually, Syrah is even spelled differently. It's a completely different grape, and it's pronounced the same, but Petite Syrah is made, the reason it's called that is the berries of that are very, very, very small. And so if you think about the fact that the juice itself, the more skin there is to the ratio, in terms of the ratio of skin to juice, mm-hmm. the more tannin, the more character is going to be steeped into that juice faster. And so a petite or something that's got small berries will give a lot more tannin faster to a wine than something that's got a bigger grape, more meat, less skin.
Okay. Well, hey, let's move on to, I want you to tell me that with my smoked turkey meal, I must have Brunello.
Oh, is that what you want to hear?
Yes.
Okay, well, anything.
Because I love Brunello.
Okay, I was going to say anything with Brunello, which is probably out of the price range of many people after you've bought all the ingredients for your turkey feast.
That's a good point. Is there a reasonably priced Brunello?
There is one in the state that is under $50 that I know of. Only one.
And in terms of Brunello, is it a quality Brunello? Would people like it if
yes,
they like Brunellos?
It's a beautiful Brunello. I mean, but it is it's a budget Brunello. Mm. And so Brunello is a type of a clone that's Sangiovese. Mm-hmm. So it's out of Italy. So it's a light, you've got this lightness. You're not going to get the tannin. So Brunello would be great. It doesn't necessarily have a hugely smoky characteristic, but it is something that's really great to always have.
And so, but there is a poor man's Brunello, which would be what I could have, isn't there?
I think it's made by Argiano. And I think it's, a poor man's Brunello.
I was thinking
the
Rosso di Montalcino. I do not know a lot about wine, but I did have this particular.
She knows how to pronounce them.
Yeah, I had this particular trip to, to Italy. Montalcino, in fact. And I just, that wine is delicious. And it's just, one aspect of this one mountain. By this mountain town, and it's perfect in every way, and then there's this wine on top of it.
But it's
not,
just stunning.
Not only is the town perfect in every way, but they have this amazing wine.
Right. And I've seen pictures. I've never gotten to be there, but it's just stunning.
I will take you there.
Oh, well, let's go. We'll do a KPCW Fox School of Wine field trip.
Yeah, like a fundraiser.
We'll call it City Tour.
We'll call it City Tour. Perfect, Tim. I just need to get on Leadership Park City and I'll go on that.
Okay, but you tell us what a smoked turkey would, what's our
wine? So you can drink your Brunello or your Rosso del Montalcino on that with that. But I did select for the white a Chardonnay out of either California or Australia because that wine is typically oaked. And Chardonnay is not a very food-friendly wine from those two regions on its own typically because the oak really has a lot of power in that wine and it tends to make it, I mean, some of them, not the good ones, but some of them almost you feel like you're chewing on a 2x4. It's so woody. But if you're pairing it with a turkey that's been smoked, you've got the balance there. The wine is going to be able to stand up to that smoked flavor of the turkey. So that was the white. And then for the red, I went to South Africa and I would go to the Pinotage. Pinotage is the coolest blend. It's not a blend. It's a hybrid down there. They took hundreds of years ago, they were growing Pinot Noir grapes and they were growing a grape called Hermitage, which is also now known as Sanso. So when they breeded these two together, they came up with Pinotage, which is because Pinot and Hermitage. Mm. But the grape itself, or the wine itself, comes off as a little bit heavier than a Pinot Noir. But the soil in South Africa has a very interesting quality it's got something called creosote in it. And the wines pick up almost a charcoal-y, smoky, almost tarry kind of a personality, which would pair perfectly with the smoked turkey. I always, when I'm doing barbecue and I'm smoking anything, I always get a Pinotage because it just goes so beautifully together. That smokiness can kind of overwhelm other foods, but when there's smoke in the food, it's perfect.
Wow. So can I find a Pinotage downstairs in our state liquor store?
In your downstairs.
Or in the other one.
Well,
over,
yes. Okay. Yes. I'm not sure they have
one. Or the
one
at the junction.
Yeah. They would have, so South Africa is an awesome section to shop in. It's hard to spend more than $20 in that section. I kid you not. And almost every single wine in that section has gotten ratings that are fabulous that let it into our state. So they're recognized. And so the one, I know the Snow Creek one has Pinotage for sure. And my guess is they would have one or two in many of the other locations, but I can't guarantee that because I usually shop at the big one.
That's great.
Yeah,
so what's
it's
your
really
favorite
awesome.
Pinotage?
Well,
because
there
I know people are listening and wanting to know.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, darn it. I avoid brands as much as I can because I hate pitching that. They're,
right. Well, we can find the one that's the most highly rated by Wine
sure.
Spectator, which is my guideline.
Or the one that's on sale.
Or the one or the that's one on sale.
That's my guideline.
The other
right.
guideline, yeah.
Right. There are some really beautiful they're probably, at the big store, there are probably 7 Pinotages to choose from.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with the head mistress of the Fox School and Wine, Kirsten Fox, and she's telling us about what we might pair with our Thanksgiving dinners tomorrow. And we have some other things to talk about as well coming up this winter with the Fox School of Wine. So let's see, have we rounded out? No, we still have the baked turkey.
Oh, yes.
To talk about.
Traditional.
Please try not. I do brine mine now. I'm trying to move past my mother's example of, you know, turkey jerky on Thanksgiving.
I hope your mom's not listening.
Well, no, she won't be listening. Yeah, sorry, Mom, if you happen to get the podcast of this. So a traditional, really the traditional turkey with the fixins. I, as well, if you listened earlier, suggested a Gruner Veltlinger for the vegetarian and the vegan. And I'm going to come back to that for the traditional. Because that wine has a good amount of acid and it's got some really big mouthfeel and it's got that white pepper, it's got the green bean and the green pepper and such. It's really an awesome white for a non-smoked turkey with all of the fixins around it. So that would be the white. And then the red, traditionally, Pinot Noir is just the wine that people go to. It doesn't have the tannin that we talked about earlier, that grippy, or it's got some, but not a huge overwhelming piece. But the other wine that tends to go well because of all the cranberries and the berries that we have and the apples and that kind of thing, Zinfandel out of California is a wine that doesn't have a huge amount of tannin. You know, it's usually in the middle of the road in terms of tannin, but it's got this really fat, amazing, jammy personality that can complement the turkey with the cranberries and that. I personally go with Pinot Noir, but I know a lot of people who talk a lot about Zinfandel with their traditional Thanksgiving feasts.
Wow. Okay. I know.
Kirsten, yeah. What about Prosecco and things like that?
Sparkling.
I mean, yeah, and I'm not talking to necessarily pair it with a type of turkey, but it's kind of a celebratory drink.
Well, I would tell you that, and although this isn't popular with people, I would tell you that sparkling like a Prosecco or a cava out of Spain or a sparkling wine out of California or even a champagne, that wine is one of the best wines, no matter what you're eating, to cleanse your palate. It's like, you know, a little Alka-Seltzer thing going in and, like, you know, or scrubbing your teeth or whatever, scrubbing bubbles in your mouth. So it's always fine to have a sparkling wine throughout the dinner. People just tend to have that at the beginning of the meal, or if they're like me, it's while they're cooking, and then you move into the normal wines at the table. But that's a great idea.
So
and
it is.
Absolutely.
Like the idea of a
In fact, a rosé, a sparkling rosé wine, there's some out of California. I think Domaine Carneros has a, excuse me for branding. Domaine
okay.
Carneros, I know. My sister used to work there, and I'm just like in love with their rosé sparkling wine. So
good to know.
Yeah,
this is such a fun interview, and I'm
goodness.
Sure our listeners are thinking the same. So let's move in. Can we wrap up Thanksgiving? Because we have a winter ahead of us in which you're doing some really interesting things. And one of those is this new tour taking place on Saturdays between 1 and 4 p.m. that's called Minds and Wines. So tell us about it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, my great-grandfather was a miner, and my grandfather was a miner. So I grew up, and my mother loved the history of the family. So we've been surrounded by pieces of ore and mining hats and candle holders and things that she found in mines. My family, that's my family, background. So they made money in that. So as I was looking around at fun things to do in Park City, and as I also realized just recently that my school of wine is not just a school of wine, it is actually an activity company with a side of wine. So we learn about wine, but we're really focused on the fun and the activities. So with that, I started to develop this concept for a tour in Park City where we hit some of the big historic locations, whether they're mines or, for example, the Miners Hospital, and I pair wines to the location based on the characteristic we're trying to pull out. So, for example, at the Ontario Mine, that was the most prolific for a long time silver mine in all of Utah. That generated $50 million of revenue and made George Hearst a millionaire and that family. And so the soil there is very, very special. And so I paired a similar soil, which is in Chablis, France. There's a special soil there called Kimmeridgian, and it's got fossilized oyster shells in it. And the wine picks up this fresh, almost like an ocean breeze flavor in the wine. And so just as the wine in Ontario Mine was, or excuse me, the dirt in the Ontario Mine was so special, so is Chablis. So we drink a little Chablis while we're there looking at the mine. We don't go into any of the mines. I wouldn't want anybody getting stuck in a mine anywhere. But we move around. We have fun. I've got all sorts of props. I think it brings out my frustrated actress. I get to wear props and have all sorts of fun. And we end up in the red light district of Park City and drinking a little port there.
There's a red light district?
There is a red light district, Tim. And there is.
I haven't heard about that.
Uh-huh. And it's lots and lots of fun to kind of think about back then. And truly, actually, they were women of means. They were the only women that really could own property on their own. And they were earning more than the men in the mines. Yes. And they also were some of the most literate of the population. Mother Urban. Mm-hmm. Made sure they were educated and taken care of. They had health care, those women. And Mother Urban made sure that they could read because the miners would come to them for not only other services, but reading the letters from home that they couldn't read.
How about that? And you'll be drinking port over in that neighborhood.
Yes, we do.
No, wait. You're doing this in the winter time. Are you going inside these places? Or are you kind of standing on the outside?
So we start in the Montage, and if it's a bad day, we'll be inside the Montage looking out at the Daily West Mine, or we'll be out on their patio drinking some sparkling wine there. And then the Ontario Mine will be outside from a vantage point where we can also see a lot of the other mines in the Park City, Deer Valley area. And then we will be outside at the Miners Hospital as well. Now, of course, we're inside a beautiful luxury vehicle between stops, so you can warm up. But we're suggesting that people make sure they're dressed for outdoors. So it's an outdoors experience, although we are inside a little bit of the time.
Okay.
And are you thinking this is going to be popular with the tourists who are guests in town, or is it going to be popular with locals, or do you see it kind of transcending and being popular with everybody?
I hope it's popular with everybody because we actually have a special discount code. Anytime a local wants to buy tickets, they use the discount code Honor Roll in our shopping cart, and they get the tickets for, rather than the $187, they get them at $147. So they get a $40 discount. And that's for as many people. If they got friends in, I could see maybe the fourth day of skiing, they're saying it's a Saturday. Let's skip the skiing. It's going to be crowded. Let's go on this tour. Let's see the Park City area, and let's go with you. So the visitors are visiting, and and they want to, you know, show off their town in a
different
way.
Do you need a helper? I think Tim would be a good helper, and yes, if not, I would.
Yes, I think we need helpers on this. I can see the cars lining up. They just show up and to help. Yeah, we have had a lot of fun. I've been doing it with some corporate groups that have been in town, and we've had a lot of fun on the tours. So we do that as well. We do corporate groups.
Sounds.
Now, what about for somebody like me who lives here and wants something to do periodically and is interested in learning more about wine? What do you offer at the Fox School as far as that sort of a program? Because I'm sure you offer something.
Well, thank you for asking that, Tim. We are going to be starting. So we opened in 2008. So we are starting into our ninth year. And we offer classes every Saturday night at the Silver Baron Lodge starting we're starting December 9th this year. We run through the first weekend in April. And every Saturday night from 6 to 7, we're doing a really fun, we call them our weekend wine series. And we pour five wines and a blind tasting challenge that's a duplicate of one of the wines you've already tasted in class. And so those wines are selected based on whatever the professor is teaching about that night. So I have a team of professors who come in with their passions and will teach about, for example, the wines of Italy or Cabernets from around the world or whatever they want to teach about. And so that's $29 a person, and that's just an hour. So if you're being, you know, maybe dragged there by your wife because you don't like wine, I've even had guys who come and they just sit there and they'll drink a beer and they just sit there with their wife who loves wine. But they're like, it's date night. I just don't want the wine, but I want to hang out with my wife. So I've had that happen, and that's, you know.
Is that a one-off? You can go to one, or do you have to sign up for a series?
It's just one, and we sell out at 22, and we do sell out almost every weekend. There are very few non-sellouts. And then we do another class that's on the third Thursday of every month for the public. That's called Table for 12. That's held at the Market at Park City in the deli section there, in the seating area there. They dim the lights. They have black tablecloths, candles. You have this beautiful view out the windows to the mountains. And Pamela Wood is a sommelier, and she's one of my professors. She also runs the Park City Wine Club. And Darcy Swedish McKay from Nosh is the cheesemonger, and they put together these great plates of food, and it's paired with four different wines, and it's a lot more about the food and wine pairing experience and your palate that way than the wine classes on Saturday night, which is more just like a pregame fun educational happy hour.
Does Darcy know you call her a cheesemonger?
Well, I think it's the official word.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes,
Darcy,
I know.
Darcy, prepare yourself.
I know. It's kind of a weird word.
Cheesemonger you.
I know. Isn't that? But it's really, people say it with pride. So Darcy if I'm insulting
proud.
You, I would
she's
think you'd
proud.
Be proud.
I like
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to be proud to call her a cheesemonger.
Every time you go to the market, you could yell it across the vegetable section. Yes,
oh, you know
she's
I will.
Got some beautiful products there.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, we are out of time. Time flies when you're talking about wine. Kirsten Fox with the Fox School of Wine, thank you so much for joining us today. Any final words?
It's a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to talk about wine. And happy Thanksgiving tomorrow to everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. I hope it's a moist turkey.
Yes, I do too.
Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
This is J.C. Coleman, manager of the Park City branch of Fairway Independent Mortgage, helping out KPCW. Celebrating 20 years, the Fairway Independent Mortgage team provides lending options for jumbo, conventional, condo, hotel financing, and more for the Park City home buyer, located at 1245 Deer Valley Drive. Details at lendtopc.com, NMLS number 2289.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you. Thank you for listening to KPCW Park City. It's 10:01.